Today is August 15th, 1989, and I'm here talking with Lynn Wadley at her home in the Arlington area of Jacksonville. Okay, first of all, I'll need your full name and the spelling for it, please.
My name is Lynn, L-Y-N-N, Wadley, W-A-D-L-E-Y.
Okay. That was easy enough. I asked such difficult questions here. Okay, and we need your date of birth and your birthplace, please.
I was born February 9th, 1939, in Jersey City, New Jersey.
Okay. And where have you lived outside of New Jersey and Florida?
I lived in New Jersey until I was 14, and in Florida until I was 19, in California for 10 years then, and had my four children there.
Oh, okay.
And in Connecticut for about 10 years or something like that, 11 or 12 maybe. And now I've been back in Florida for 8 years.
Okay, all right. And your occupation?
I'm a computer programmer.
Okay. That's been kind of recent, right?
Yes, I've been a computer programmer probably for about 5 years. And my area of expertise is financial matters.
Okay.
I know a lot about taxes and investments and things like that.
I see. Okay. And your education also?
I've completed just about 3 years of college.
Hmm. Okay. Where did you go?
Well, I went to different places while I was having my children.
Oh, I see.
But most of it I did in California.
Okay. All right.
Sacramento State College, specifically.
Okay. All right. How did you become involved with the folk music? Where did you get your start from?
Well, I'd always loved music. Music was a really big part of my life every day, and of course it was off the radio, which at that time, adults and youngsters listened to the same kind of music. Hard to imagine though that might be. And mother was always singing, dad was always playing the piano, and there was always music around the home. And I was always singing, walking down the street or whatever. But when I met the fellow that I was married to for 23 years, he played the guitar, and he was the first guitar player that I knew. And that was a big source of our enjoying each other's company, is that we both loved music so much. So I became exposed to all kinds of folk music through him, learned all the songs that he knew really at that time.
Uh-huh.
He liked a lot of Burl Ives songs and also Woody Guthrie. I never did get too crazy about Burl Ives, although I like him all right, but I do love Woody Guthrie.
Did you perform together at all?
Yes, so he was really the performer, and I really just wasn't. I was just a person who liked to sing and who enjoyed learned songs very easily, which he didn't.
Hmm.
So I'd always be in the front and feeding him the words because he'd always be forgetting them. There's something kind of interesting at that. See, I did play the piano a little bit when I was a kid, but only from music, only from sheet music. I didn't know how to transpose. And it's very important for me that a song be in my key. Not as important as it used to be, but used to be very important because my range wasn't so wide. It's widened a lot recently. So I'd be kind of screeching if it wasn't in my key. And when he and I started playing together, or I'd be singing along with him, it would always be in his key. And I would be screeching or scraping along the bottom. And he just didn't realize that some of the songs perhaps we should have done in my key. So I didn't really know that I was a very good singer, because I am a very good singer, but only when it's in my key.
Uh-huh.
He wanted to teach me to play the guitar, and I didn't want to, because his fingers were like claws. They were his fingertips were like fingernails. They were so rough. And I had very small, delicate hands, and thought that would be such a shame if my pretty little hands turned into claws like his had.
Uh-huh.
But after a long time, I decided that I would learn to play the guitar. And as soon as I did, I started doing songs in my key. And then I found out that I was really a nice singer.
Mm-hmm.
It was quite a shock. I mean, in fact, I was very annoyed with him. And still am.
So he was the one who got you to play guitar first?
Yes, he was.
He talked you into it? Uh-huh.
Well, it happened because I found an auto harp in an old garage sale for $15 and bought it. And as you probably know on the auto harp, if you need the key of C, you just push the button that has the C on it, right. And you, I mean the chord of C, not the key of C. And so I was able to see how easy it is to fit chords into songs that you don't know. Remember, I had always played the piano by music, written music, and it always seemed to me miraculous to be able to play a song that you didn't have the music for, and I couldn't imagine how, for example, my ex-husband could do that. I just thought it took an exceptional talent that I didn't have. But then I started to see that they're just basic chords and that you could sing hundreds and hundreds of songs with the same basic chords. And so I did on the auto harp. And then I said, okay, now I understand how it goes together and all I have to do is find out where these chords are on the guitar. So that's what I did.
A lot of musicians find it real difficult to make that transition from playing with music to playing by ear and all that. Did you find it that way? Or?
Well, I just keep them totally separate. Like, I play the piano by music, and I play other things like the guitar and songs on the dulcimer. I just play by knowing when it's time for the chord to change and figuring out where it probably goes by trial and error sometimes, or just from experience. So I never did really blend them.
I see. What instruments do you play?
Well, I really don't play the piano, as it turns out. I might again someday, but I don't. The guitar I've been playing for many years now, about 20 years, and I'm never going to say any more than 20, I don't believe, because that just seems long enough, 20 years or more. But not particularly well. My hand, my little delicate hand, is a really big minus on a guitar, even though I have a smallish guitar. I really have a tiny hand. I have about the tiniest hand that... Well, I have the tiniest hand on a woman that I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Except Oriental women sometimes. So I'm an adequate guitar player, but for how hard I've tried and how diligently I've practiced, I'm not particularly good. And compared to my friends, I'm not very good. Compared to other people who don't play the guitar, I'm wonderful. And the average person who ever tried, I'm very good.
Right.
But the ones who stuck with it. So, especially because of that, it made me... Well, then as I became a performer, which is another story, as I became a performer myself, then I was quite embarrassed about my guitar playing being so mediocre, because so many performers are really wonderful guitar players. And so I thought, well, if I can't play very well... Maybe I could play. Should I talk faster?
No, this is fine. I'm just monitoring to make sure that we're getting something here.
Okay.
Yeah, that's why I was checking out the tape recorder
okay.
There. No.
Yes.
It's better, actually, if you just do it normally and take your time and whatever.
Okay, I didn't know if we have to have it.
Yeah. A lot of times when I'm fiddling around with equipment, people get a little worried, and it's only like during the first part, just I want to make sure that everything's going around and I haven't left it on pause. Or.
Okay. Right, exactly. Oh, so I thought, well, if I can't really play very well, I could really have a better show if I had more instruments, just for a little novelty. So that's when I added the dulcimer. I thought I'd learn 10 or 15 songs on the dulcimer and people would really enjoy hearing the dulcimer. What I didn't know is that I was just going to lose my heart to the dulcimer. Really, that is the instrument love of my life. And in fact, apart from instruments, that's just one of the top 10 loves of my life of any kind, I'm sure. Though as the grandchildren pile up, probably it'll have to go down to the next 10 after that. Then I added the auto harp, of course. I hadn't played that since I played the guitar. I mean, once I got the guitar, I didn't bother with that auto harp. It wasn't a very good one. But a few years ago, I picked up another auto harp, and that's a very dynamic instrument. And since I'm a very quiet guitar player on some songs, the auto harp is just super, still very simple. Very, very simple, but sounds really good. So there's that. And then a friend of mine had a Bode Psaltery, P-S-A-L-T, I think it's E-R-Y. And he came home from a festival and was talking about it and had some papers on it I sent away for one. And that's it, right there, that little one there. And it's okay, but it really... doesn't have a particularly good sound and it doesn't have quite enough notes on it. But I decided that I thought I would like to play the Bode Psaltery, so I got another one. So I keep that one on the wall because it's pretty. But I guess it's in its quilted bag right now.
Okay.
And I play that a little bit, not very much, but I could very easily, with about 2 weeks' notice, have 5 or 6 songs ready to do. And I expect to do that sometime real soon.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a songwriter.
I was going to ask you about that.
Yes, yeah. I'm a songwriter, and different aspects of music will take my attention for a whole lot of time, you know, and I'll be thinking, well, when I get beyond this point, then I'll spend a little time with a psaltery, or I'll do this or that. And I've been teaching dulcimer for a year, just 1 year. I've only been playing for 3, but there's nobody to teach dulcimer, and so I thought, well, I will. And I've turned out to be a very good dulcimer teacher and a much better dulcimer player for having studied to be a good dulcimer teacher. So the last year has been really, I've been really emphasizing the dulcimer. And the last 5 or 6 months, I've been working very hard on my new cassette, which is just out a couple of weeks ago. Just got it out.
Okay.
And I do have some dulcimer on it, but mostly it's me and the guitar. I sing the 13 original songs and then play 9 traditional dulcimer songs. And I'm hoping with both sides there that the people who like me on the dulcimer will buy the tape and then get to like my original music, which they might not have heard at all. And similarly, people who love my original music can listen and say, what is that beautiful instrument, and then get interested in dulcimer.
Where did you do the recording for that?
I did it in Jacksonville at Key Studios, where I did the recording. This is actually my second cassette.
Oh, okay.
Actually, it's my third one. The first one I did very unofficially and sold for several years, you know, it was just made in a living room with some nice equipment, perhaps like you have here, or maybe with a little bit, maybe nicer. So several $1,000 reel-to-reel that somebody I knew had.
Yeah, that somebody's knocker up it.
So I did that, and it came out, it was lots of fun, and people really liked it. But then after a few years, I wanted to have something that was better. And I hired some musicians to play my songs with me, which is the only time that's ever happened. And that was quite thrilling. And it came out beautiful. And it cost me a lot of money to do. I think it cost me $1,400. Which is a lot of money for a solo person to do.
Right.
If it was a group and it cost $1,400, we could each sell to our friends. But with me, it's just me. So I think I've just broken even on that. Which isn't too bad, and it's been 2 years since that came out.
Yeah.
And then, just 3 weeks ago, the new one came out, and that was a mixture. I kept the cost way down by not having other musicians, and that meant it didn't take as much time in the studio. And it's just like a concert with me, a coffee house, like I sometimes put on at different places. And so I've almost broken even on that one already.
Oh, great.
Yeah, I sold about 60... cassettes the first week, and that's still pretty close to my sale. As I said, it's only been 3 weeks, and I think when I've sold 100, I will have broken even.
How many did you get printed your first time around?
100.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
So I'm giving away quite a few of them. That's one of the reasons that I do it, to have it for my family, and that's a big, big part of it.
Yeah.
And I take a lot of pride and a lot of care, like with the label and with the remarks and with the type print, and to me it feels a lot like sending your children to college. It's like you have these children and you love them, and then you want them to be able to make it on their own. And when I put the songs on the cassettes, now I've got 13 on this one, 11 on the last one, and different, about 9 ones on the first one that weren't on the second one. So all those songs, I feel like I have done what I owed them. I really love my songs. It's hard to imagine, although maybe not for you being a folklorist, but most people just wouldn't understand. And
well, sure.
I just feel like if I died today, I don't have to worry about those songs. I know that maybe somebody will hear them sometime, and if they don't, it won't be because I didn't do my part, because they're really important, and they're wonderful songs, too, and people write to me about them, people that I've never met, heard them from their friends, and they call me sometimes.
What types of things do you write about with your songs?
Well, the number one theme is being mature and being single. It's looking for love, not finding it, but still having a happiness about life and enjoying the love and being a good sport about the broken heart and that sort of thing. It's really just like being single and being mature. It's just that you don't usually hear songs about it.
Uh-huh.
And people are always telling me that it helped them a lot, that they say the lines out of my songs when the time is appropriate. And then they'll say, there they are, quoting my song again.
That's a feeling I think everybody can relate to, is, you know, a certain song for a certain occasion.
Mm-hmm.
And it must be really rewarding to be on the other end of it to actually have written that song.
It's wonderful.
Yeah.
It's just and people think they know me, which they do. I mean, people feel very close to me, faster than I feel close to them, of course, because they've been inside and seen what I've gone through and what I've shared with them. And then many times they'll hang around and tell me stories of what happened to them, and it's just wonderful. It's just wonderful. And any place I go, there are places that I could stay with people and be really welcome. People that know me and who I sort of know and definitely trust. So it's a very happy life.
Yeah, yeah.
It's 8 years since I became a songwriter. It happened overnight when I got divorced.
Uh-huh. How many tunes have you written about?
Gee, I don't know.
Yeah.
Probably twice, three times as many, something like that, as I've kept.
I see.
A high percentage of them have been keepers.
Yeah.
Really, and some of them I have fun with, and I've kept for myself on tape, but I know they're not really songs for other people, but I enjoy what they make me think of. But, yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah. That's pretty prolific there in this number of years.
Oh, I wrote about 40 songs in the first year.
Oh,
And I'll never do that again, I know. You know, it was just the right year for it. And then it stopped really altogether, which was just about like it had been for the first 42 years of my life. And I thought, well, if that's it, that's all right. I'm really glad I've got all these wonderful songs, and it's been a wonderful thing, and maybe that was just the time for it. And then they've kind of come out in dribs and drabs since, sometimes 5 or 6 in 6 months, and sometimes none in 10 months. And I'm just there for it whenever it's ready. That is my way. It writes itself, and I just sort of catch it as it goes by.
Yeah.
Not everybody does it that way. Some people work at it a lot more. I don't do too much work. I'm an editor, but not a writer. It comes, and I edit it. Is the way it feels like to me.
Yeah. That's a good way of putting it. I kind of feel that way just with writing compositions or doing essays or articles or whatever writing that I have to do. It's like the ideas are there, and you just have to kind of wait for them to kind of come percolating up, and then it's a matter of getting rid of everything else that shouldn't be there. It sounds real similar to
you. Let them move you where you need to be moved to, and you say, oh, okay, oh, I didn't know it was going to say that.
Right.
Sometimes there'll be a line that just really surprises me when it comes out. I have no idea where it was coming from, and yet that will tend to be one of the most powerful lines in the song.
Yeah, I think writing, at least the verbal part of it, with words anyway, really has a way to help you kind of clarify your thoughts and let you know what you were thinking about, or maybe even invent what you were thinking about. It just kind of comes out naturally that way.
Mine are almost strictly verbal. They have melodies, but that's just not the point.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Usually, all the times your lyrics are first, and then you...
No, they come together.
Oh, really? Oh, I see.
Yeah, they come together. But there's no question which one is the important one, and it just kind of brings a melody along. And I do work on making the melody a little bit more interesting, but even when I'm finished, they're not all that interesting. They're okay. I mean, for somebody who plays simply like I do, they're just fine. And with a pretty voice, they sound nice, but it's not the point.
Yeah.
And I do tell people, if you can't listen, just, you know, don't put the tape on. Wait until you can. It's pleasant enough to hear in the background. It's not worse than other things, but why bother is kind of what I think. It's the message that is worth getting.
How did you get started with the performing?
Well, when I got divorced 8 years ago, that was when, apparently, that was my born-again experience. And it wasn't even my choice, is the funny thing. And now I've had the happiest 8 years of my life. It's very ironic that how hard I fought against it, and thank goodness I didn't win. But at that time, as I said, I started writing songs.
Oh, I see. So the performance came along naturally with the songwriting?
And at that same time, the same week that I got divorced and the same month that I started writing songs, I moved to Florida and I changed my name. I took back my maiden name, which I would think you might want to ask the person you're interviewing what their birth name is, just in case you don't have it. But you do have my birth name.
Okay.
Wadley. And so as I moved down here and was meeting new friends, and as these songs were coming out, sometimes three in a week, all of a sudden just pop, 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 like popcorn or something like that, I was sharing the songs with my new friends, and they got all excited about them, and they seemed to have a lot of parties back then. I don't think they have as many parties now as they did then, but they asked me to come and say, tell so-and-so that song that you just shared with me. So I had no nervousness about that because I was anxious to share my songs. Where if I had been asked to be a singer, I would have been kind of nervous because I had... Sometimes I get a bad note in there, I do a little screeching every now and then. But I had no reluctance at all about sharing my songs. And then as I was doing that more and more and got quite comfortable with that, people started asking me if I was a professional singer. And first I just laughed. But then as more people said that, they said, is that how you earned your living up in Connecticut, where I had just moved from? And I started to think, gee, I really need to think again. I'm really a better singer than I realized I was. And then when everybody started to say they wanted to take my songs home with them and wouldn't I please make a record, then when I did, then I knew that I really was a singer.
Do you perform much in the area here?
Not much in the area, no. I hope that will change. I'm kind of strange. My kind of music is very simple, and being by myself and not a very strong instrumentalist, it's hard to think of places where I really belong.
Yeah, there's not too many clubs that really cater toward acoustic music or...
No, not too many. No, there's probably some. I've just been so busy enjoying my music that I haven't been willing to take the time to call and to knock on doors. And I don't think that there's a rich area here, and I don't think it's like the first day that I decide to do it, I will find something. It's very possible that I will, but not the first day. I think it's going to take a lot of turn downs. And I'm about ready to give it another shot. My new cassette is wonderful and very professional, and it's just me. So this is the first time that I've had a wonderful cassette that is just like somebody really would get if they had me. And so I feel quite confident that I can present myself nicely. And as somebody said to me, if they don't want you or if they don't like you, it doesn't mean that you're not good. It just means that that's not the place for you.
Right.
And even if there's no place in Jacksonville, that's okay because I have lots and lots of fun with my music. But earlier on, I think that if I had had enough doors slammed, I might have really thought that I was worth slamming on. So now I really feel like I'm much more confident and it doesn't matter all that much. But I often do put on shows out of town.
Yeah, I was wondering where you play.
Yes. Really, I'm very popular in the Unitarian Church circuit.
And I didn't realize they had a music circuit there.
They don't. But I'm sort of it, I think, almost. And I've put on whole evening shows or whole Sunday morning programs in Ocala and Tallahassee. I've done a lot of singing in Virginia at a great big convention that they have. That's where people have met me. I've done Hartford, Connecticut, which is where I came from. I got to go back there and do my songs. Manchester, Connecticut, more technically, but the Hartford area. I've been invited to lots of nice places, like to put on shows, for example, in Nashville, at the Nashville Unitarian Church, which I'm very anxious to do. But having a regular full-time job has not allowed me the kind of time to do that. And being single, it's kind of hard for me anyway, to go off by myself on a huge jaunt. It wouldn't have had to be, but it was, because that was never my habit for all those years that I was married. But now I'm getting to be a more confident driver, and I've arranged my work schedule, so I'm only working 20 hours a week, and some of the other time will be discretionary, and my work hours can be rearranged to allow long weekends or times to visit the schools. That's something I definitely had in mind when I took this half-time job.
Yeah.
So I think I'm going to be doing a lot more. Also, I have a couple of friends who are singing my songs now, and a wonderful group that I just met in Virginia. Named Windfall, who just asked if they could do some of my songs in their concerts.
Oh, great.
Not particularly the single ones, the ones that are my more typical ones, but some of my other songs about the meaning of life, but again in a very good-humored kind of a fun way. And one gentleman who I think perhaps is about to get discovered, he's going to Nashville he's been invited to come and do a demo tape there. He's a wonderful songwriter, and he's a big fan of mine, and he says that he's definitely going to have an album that I'm definitely going to be on his album, my song, that is, not my voice.
Oh, terrific.
So it could be something's about to happen.
Yeah.
But it also doesn't matter a whole lot if it doesn't. It matters if it does, but it doesn't matter if it doesn't.
Yeah, I know the feeling. Yeah. How many times have you played at our festival, Florida Folk Festival there?
Ever since I've been in Florida, all of them in a row. So it's probably 8 festivals.
Okay.
But it could be 7. It's one of those two. We could figure it out.
Yeah. Well, how did we rope you in? I'm kind of curious about there.
Yeah, I was just really, really lucky that I don't know who, how it was, that I found out that a guy named Ray, I bet you know his name, he was big in folk music in Jacksonville. His last name is a first name. Hi.
Hiya.
Think of it in a minute, probably. Anyway, I got a job singing in a restaurant for 2 weeks. I got an agent. That's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Had this friend, and I said something about how I love to sing, and she said, oh, would you like to earn money on it? And I said, well, of course. That seemed kind of like a dumb question. And she said, well, my son is an agent. I'll tell him about you. Well, about 3 days later, he called, and he happened to have a little job right then that he needed somebody for, and I did it. It was just a party in a really fancy home. It was quite thrilling. I got $75 or something like that. Very thrilling. And about a week later, he called and said he wanted me to go to an audition at a restaurant that wanted to have some very nice acoustical music. And I went and did the audition, and I got the job, and it was supposed to be a 6-week job, but it turned out to be a 2-week job. I don't think that was my fault. The restaurant went out of business shortly after, and I don't think that was my fault either. But in those 2 weeks, I was absolutely in heaven. And I thought, because this had happened so easily, I thought that was what it's going to be like from then on. It was kind of funny. I just thought that, well, that's it, okay. I kept my regular job, and I went and sang for 3 or 4 hours a night at the restaurant, and I was making $20 an hour singing, plus pretty decent regular job, and it was, oh, God, it was just amazing. But the agent went out of business, and I wrote to about, oh, I think 6 or 8 local agents, and not one of them ever even answered me. And I never had another agent, and I've had very few jobs since then. I had some concerts, but not very many jobs. I sing at hospitals, too. I've done that a lot over the years. I don't know, hundreds of free concerts.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I love that. Mostly don't do my songs.
Yeah. So the agent got you the job at the festival, then?
No, but through him, I found out who it was. Well, this fellow, Ray, was involved at Applejack's.
Oh, okay.
And everybody said, oh, you should sing at Applejack's. That's the perfect place for you. So I called up Applejack's, and he came over, and I sang for an hour for him. Just the two of us, like the two of us are sitting here.
Uh-huh.
And I did probably every good song that I had written up to that point.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't having good luck with quiet acoustical music at Applejack's, but he said, what you should do is sing at the festival. So...
Oh, I see.
So okay. I sent in an application, and they sent me an invitation, and I went there.
Okay. Yeah.
And it was really interesting. They put me on the big stage right off and gave me 2 little half-hour concerts. I really can't imagine why they did, and my thought is that they probably wouldn't now if a person who was just where I was wrote to them. I think they're so full now of people more developed than I was at that time.
Yeah, in the past years, we've had to be real selective about the numbers of people that we can bring on.
I imagine so. There's only so many only so many square feet in that campground.
Yeah.
But I went by myself, and I was very nervous about being by myself. And I hoped to camp, but I didn't because I was too afraid. I went to the campground, and I waited for somebody to say, "Hey, come on over." But they didn't. And they didn't know that I was waiting for that. They didn't know that I was by myself. They just plain didn't know. They were having a good time, and I just didn't. I was just too shy and too timid. I had gone so few places by myself in my whole adult life. Zero, almost. So, but you want to hear what happened?
Sure.
I think it was really interesting. I was given this spot half an hour. It was called, like, In the Oaks or something like that. It's the last year that they ever had this spot. It was just sitting out there in the trees. There wasn't any real spot there. And I went, and there was not a soul there to hear my half-hour concert. And what do you do when you've never done anything like this before anyway, and there's nobody there, and
I'm going to get started.
Okay,
you were describing your experiences there at your first Florida Folk
Festival. Yes, being all by myself there in the whatever, in the oak forest or whatever forest it was that we were supposed to be in. And every now and then somebody would walk by because it was the path from the craft area to the azalea garden. And when they did, they would have this horrible look, like you do sometimes when you're in a store and the shopkeeper looks at you and you have this feeling you're not going to be able to get away. Imagine there being a concert going on that nobody is at, and then you would have the misfortune to be walking by. You certainly would not want to slow down and listen because you know you can never get away. So they'd make this wide turn around so I wouldn't get mixed up. They were just passing by. They didn't come to listen. But one person did start to pass by and heard me and liked a particular song that I was doing, and that was Peggy Kelly from Palatka. And she has folk festivals in Palatka, and you know, the Kelly clan from the festival. And she stopped and said she had to rush off, but she really enjoyed my singing and would I like to sing in the Palatka festival. And she would always invite people to stay over at her house if they would sing in the Palatka festival. So I met people on a smaller basis there and told them about my situation and how shy I was about going to places, and they made me very welcome. And from then on, I knew some people and knew who to hang around with a little bit.
I see.
So now I don't have this strange feeling anymore. I have lots of really dear friends, and I've gone and visited them and been in different festivals.
Yeah. Do you enjoy doing the folk festivals?
Yes, I do.
Uh-huh.
I do. It's just sometimes you do have to go awfully far for not very much singing, and depending on what else is on and how hot it is and things like that. I certainly do enjoy it.
Right.
But sometimes my choice is to stay home and make music all day instead of drive 3 hours to make music for 20 minutes is kind of typical, and then go home. When it's mostly when I go, it's a camp over.
Oh, uh-huh.
I go to the Dade City one. I love that one.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is just such a sweet festival.
Yeah, I was wondering what festivals you make it to.
Well, Palatka, I'm always in when they have it. They didn't have it this year. The Dade City, the White Springs. And sometimes I go to some in the Tampa area. I go over and visit my friend Jan Milner, who right now is the president of Florida, Friends of Florida Folk, and a wonderful dulcimer player. She's the one who helped me learn to play the dulcimer, told me what to send away for, where to buy my dulcimer, and what books to send away for. So after that, she and I became very dear friends, and so we get together quite often. And if there's any festival in the area, then we go.
Yeah.
Like she just invited me to be in a festival over Labor Day weekend in the Brooksville or Dade City area. I don't know just what it is, but we'll probably be there.
I see. Yeah, I hear the Tampa Bay area is a pretty good area for music.
Yes, Gainesville's nice too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm really envious.
Yeah.
People who live there.
Yeah. And Jacksonville, you got to look for it.
Yes. Well, you have to look very, very hard for it. This sounds like a transition to a
Yeah, it kind of comes up naturally here. Well, it kind of gets me into the whole folk music support group that you have here.
Yes.
I'm kind of interested in what you've been doing with that. You've been pretty active in having kind of jam sessions with different folk musicians in the area, right?
That's right. When I came here from Connecticut, up north, I was in a little folk group that my ex-husband and I had started, and was in it all the way up until the time that I was ready to leave. And so I really wanted to have some friends who played music down here too, and didn't find them very easily, and so I started putting notices in the paper, and really did not do very well at all at getting people, until I learned to play the dulcimer. I don't know why that is, that it worked out that way, but after trying and getting some calls and not having anything develop from it, I just let it go for a while. But when I started to play the dulcimer, I really became very anxious to meet some dulcimer players, if there were any. So I advertised for a River City Dulcimers and Friends, was what I said. And I knew there wasn't going to be a dulcimer club. As far as I knew, I might be the only dulcimer player in Jacksonville. It's not real popular. But I thought, well, I'll call it that for a few months, and we'll see. If there are any, they'll come out. So I said, dulcimers and instruments that are compatible, like banjos, fiddles, and guitars, please come. And we did get a couple of dulcimers and a couple of auto harps, and got together and had a nice, very pleasant, low-key kind of a time. And so I just kept putting a notice in every month, and changed the meeting night to a Sunday night, because a lot of people, not that there were a lot of people, but one or two people didn't think Wednesday was a very good day. So over a period of time, it seemed like we'd pick up about one person a month. And then after a while, it'd sort of drift away. And what we have now, and I changed it after four or five months to the Jacksonville Folk Music Support Group.
Oh.
And we've got about 9 people who usually get together.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes if there's something special going on, each of us might have a friend or so who comes once in a while but really isn't a member of the group. And some have friends who they brought who are now members of the group. In fact, that's kind of been the main way that we've gotten people. And it's turned out to be a very fun, kind of supportive thing.
Yeah.
We put on a coffee house at the Unitarian Church last Saturday night.
Yeah, I wanted to see that, but it was out of town there.
That was our second one.
Uh-huh.
I think there's going to be one in Mandarin in September, at least it appears that way.
Okay.
The date is a little indefinite. It's hard to find the date that everybody can go to.
Yeah.
But what I really wanted was for it to be a place that people wouldn't, 2 things in my mind, people wouldn't have to be good at all. That's why I call it a support group. And in my little notices I said, excellence not required, but will not be turned away. Because I didn't want to either say we're a bunch of people who can't play, you know.
Okay, you were telling me about your notice that you had out, the phone rang.
Right, that I had said that excellence was not required, but that it would not be turned away. I thought that was a pretty cute way of saying it, because the 2 important things to me were, one, that we be varied, or that people who are not particularly good be welcome and encouraged. That was important to me. And the other, it kind of goes along with it too, is I didn't want us to work up the same songs. I didn't want us to be like the Kingston Trio, only 10 of us or whatever. I wanted us to have our own songs, yes, to join in each other's, but not to make it a performing group where we'd all perform the same songs.
I see. What kind of instrumentalists show up for that?
Well, we've got guitars and banjos. We have an excellent hammered dulcimer, and the gentleman who plays that has only been playing for a year, and he's just wonderful. He's really good considering nothing, never mind consider anything, and he's just phenomenal considering 1 year, so he might be a good one for you to talk to, huh? He's also from England. And let's see, what else? The other dulcimers basically faded away. I'm the only mountain dulcimer, really, in the group. We've got a wonderful blues guitarist. And we've got a guitarist that's more toward rock and roll, but it's still compatible. We've got a lot of bluegrass. We have a bass.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it's not just one instrument per person. We've got the auto harp, my auto harp. So we have a lot more instruments than we have people. Probably almost twice as many, I think. At least 50% as many. And the one disappointment is we don't really have anybody who isn't really pretty good.
Oh.
I still hope. I still encourage them. And there are a couple who are trying to get up their courage to come. But it's too bad when there are a bunch of good people. People, even though we're really friendly and welcoming, they just feel like they don't want to come back.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting. Some of the bluegrass jams, they have them divided into two groups, the beginners and then the more advanced there. And that seems to work pretty well for them.
Good. Yeah, we're too little, you divide us up. Well,
yeah. Do you have any fiddle players that show up to these? Anybody play the fiddle?
No.
Yeah.
And we don't have a harmonica, and I really wanted a harmonica, and I've especially put in the paper, harmonica players are especially welcome this month, and it hasn't happened yet. We've had a mandolin, which we'd love to have, but he was too good for us, really. He was playing professional jobs all the time. We are good, but we're not professional. Not as a group.
I see. With the banjo style, do you have anybody playing the clawhammer or frailing style, or is it all bluegrass?
It's mainly bluegrass.
Oh, uh-huh.
But one lady who plays the banjo a little bit and comes some of the time, she plays a little clawhammer style.
Oh, really?
She's learning more.
Oh, great. Good. Okay. There's not too many people in town who play clawhammer banjo. I only know of a couple.
Uh-huh. Well, about a year ago, I started a little music business when I started teaching. And I started telling my students where they could buy things, and it was such a nuisance sort of getting the addresses and all this. It was turning into a lot of telephone time, so I thought, well, why don't I see if I can help them with these things so that there'd be a little bit of money coming to me for the time that I was spending. So at that time, I started representing two places that have wonderful lessons that you can get either audio or video. And so there's
Homespun
wonderful...
part of that? Is Homespun Tapes part of
that? Oh, yes. Uh-huh. So I'm a Homespun rep.
Oh,
okay. Kicking Mule also.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just wonderful. And I sell the things at a discount, and I can be really excited that I'm providing an excellent service. And I keep quite a bit on hand, like samples of things, not like...
Yeah, I was curious about
this.
Tapes. It seems like a great business there.
Yes, really. It's a nice, nice business.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll have some more clawhammer style players soon, because right now on the top of my list is a lady who wants to see about the learning clawhammer banjo, who's a music teacher at UNF.
Awesome.
Or maybe somewhere else, but I met her at UNF teaching the gifted youngsters for the summer program. That's something you probably know about. Or should, if not.
Yeah.
So there's two people for us to check. I'll have to look up the names.
Okay. Yeah. Let me check some more things you've been wanting to ask about.
No, we didn't even mention the saw.
Well, we'll get to the saw here
history.
A little bit.
Okay.
Here.
So we have a saw, back to that question of what instruments we have in the group,
okay.
We have a saw, but our banjo player sort of suggested to me that he thought it'd be much nicer if I didn't bring the saw. So I haven't brought the saw lately.
Uh-huh.
But lots of other people always say, why don't you bring the saw? And it's funny how one person saying, why don't you not bring it, sometimes carries more weight than five people saying, why don't you?
Yeah.
I think it's time for me to start bringing it again, especially since I've been practicing.
Sure. Okay. Let me check through a little bit more. One thing I've been interested in, there's quite a few songwriters in Florida that come to the festivals that write a lot of songs about Florida. And I was wondering if you've ever written any songs, Florida songs, about the state per se.
No, I haven't. And in fact, I get bored with Florida songs.
Yeah, I was wondering what your opinion of those.
Well, I'm not much for description anyway. It's what's going on with the people that always interests me, not the description of where the place is. And it's the same thing whether I'm reading or whether I'm writing.
Yeah,
occasionally, I love Don Broom's songs. Now, they're Florida songs, but they're songs about the people. And some others, but mainly they're full of description, and I just don't think they're that interesting.
Yeah. One thing that I've really...
Sorry about that.
No, I was just kind of curious about what your attitude toward that was.
Especially when there's like a half a day, or really all day, Florida songs at the river thing there. Yeah. What do they call it? The gazebo?
Yeah, the gazebo.
Which is the nicest place to be. And I do go down and listen. Mm-hmm. But then I leave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it's just
I think that those stages
I wish they'd open that stage for other things. To me, it's not fair that you have to be bored. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. That's
no,
too
that's
strong. Because really, sometimes it's wonderful. It's
yeah.
just it. Small doses.
Yeah.
Bluegrass music is the same thing for me too. I like bluegrass music, but I just don't want to hear it on and on and on
yeah.
and on.
Yeah. One thing I've found kind of interesting is in the Florida songs, at least with festivals I've been to, there's a real theme of "Hi, welcome to Florida. Now go home."
And it could be that being a Yankee might have something to
yeah.
do with my lack of affection. But I think that the people in the places that they write songs from, like Citra and Gainesville and all that. That's a different Florida. Of course, Jacksonville's a different Florida, too.
Yeah.
I guess every place is a different Florida, but I like Jacksonville in that it's not all paved and it's not all hot and it's not all full of people who came from somewhere else and go back there kind of running your town when they don't live there.
Yeah.
I don't like Southern Florida very much, whatever. Seen of it.
Yeah.
But I can see that you could really love the center of the state, those rural areas.
Yeah.
But even so, even though I might love it, I wouldn't want to sing songs about it all that much.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm also wondering if you've gotten in touch with any of the kind of ethnic folk music here in Jacksonville, if you're aware of much of that that's going on. For example, there's an Arabic folk musician who has a night of Arabic folk music once a month at his restaurant.
No, I really don't know
uh-huh.
anything about all of them.
Yeah, there's quite a bit. You have to look for it, but it's here. There's a lot of, there's Arabic music and dance here, and of course Greek dance, East Indian music traditions and East Indian dance is real big in Jacksonville, surprisingly.
I love the Afghan restaurant. Maybe
uh-huh.
they're the same people who are singing or playing.
There are another ones there.
Mm-hmm.
Cambodian and Korean, Japanese, a lot of the other Asian ethnic groups have music and dance too. That's part of it.
I'd like to hear about that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was wondering if your support group ever got in touch with them at all or saw any of those.
No, and they never got in touch with us.
Right, right. Yeah, I was wondering what the extent of that was there. Okay. Let's see. I'm also wondering about the teaching. How did that get started? When did you start teaching?
I started teaching the dulcimer a year ago.
Oh, uh-huh.
At the community school, at the junior high for community education. And I don't exactly remember why I did. Oh, I know. I had some major surgery last year, and when I had it coming, I thought that here would be a chance for me to think of a lot of things that I might not have gotten around to and make lists. I thought that it was going to take me 6 weeks to recover. Unfortunately, I was all recovered in about 10 days and back to work in about 2 weeks. But I say, unfortunately, with tongue-in-cheek,
right.
I was just thrilled at how well that I did. But it did make me make that list, and I thought one thing I would like to check into would be find out about teaching the dulcimer, because remember, I had really lost my heart to it. I had just been spending 2 years studying all on my own, sending away for books and cassettes, and I wanted other people to play with. I didn't especially want to be their teacher, but I thought that there wasn't any teacher around, and so I do the two things. I put the ad in to try to find people to play with, and didn't really do too much on that. The people who played the dulcimer were all interested primarily in something else, and that was the something else that they wanted to spend their time with. So we had fun, but it was not going to be what I was looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought how nice it would be if I could help other people. Because when I've been playing the dulcimer, okay, it's coming back to me, every time I would play, like at church or at the hospitals, there'd always be somebody say, "My brother has one of those," or "I have one of those," "my next door neighbor has one of those," but they never knew how to play it. So I understood why, because the dulcimer is an unusually beautiful instrument. It also doesn't cost real lot to get started on, though I am proof that you can spend a lot of money as you get into it. So I was thinking that some of these people must want to learn to play the dulcimer, and since I loved it so much and had, I thought, found good places to learn, I thought I could show them. I thought that in 6 weeks I could really give somebody a very good start and save them a year on their own and maybe make the difference between them playing and thinking that they wish that they would have played. And I really feel like the main purpose in my life is to spread music. That is why I am here, and I think music is peace and love, and that's what I want to be remembered for, and I know that is what I will be remembered for, too. But even if it hadn't worked, it would still be the reason. So I went to the school and asked them, and they said they didn't really think there'd be that many people who wanted to learn, but we could give it a try, and we could try again, and maybe over a period of time enough people would sign up. And then I called up a friend of mine who wanted to be a newspaper writer, and she wrote an article about me and the dulcimer, and it was a beautiful article and a nice picture in it. And then the next week was enrollment for the class, and 40 people tried to sign up for the class.
Wow.
And I had limited it to 10, but I took 12. And so over a period of time, then we contacted those people who had been turned away, and so they all had a chance to get classes other times. Mm-hmm. But the thing that surprised me is that when people had been through the 6 weeks, they wanted to stay. So I have students who were in that very first class who are still continuing, but then we keep adding more. Mm-hmm. And because the talent and experience level varies so much, somebody could come in now and really be one of the top students, and somebody could have been one of the first students and be one of the bottom ones. But as long as everybody is learning something and happy,
yeah,
which they are,
huh,
it's really a good, wonderful thing.
Yeah. How many students do you have now?
Well, classes are just about to start again, we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see what we have.
Okay.
But I'm offering three different classes in music.
Gee.
Starting in about 2 weeks. One is the dulcimer. One is music simplified. It's an easy way to learn to play, really without any talent, just playing bar chords. And I think that's going to be very good for people who have tried to play the guitar and just found it was beyond them the usual way. Mm-hmm. And the other is what I call campfire sing-along practice.
Mm-hmm.
That I think there are a lot of people who know how to play the chords, but they just are too timid to play. They're never going to get the practice that they need. They can almost do it, but they're never going to get the rest of the way.
Yeah.
So if that's so, and if they come and we pair up and just, I'll teach them a little bit about how chords fit together. And then the main thing is just a chance to sit around and practice where it's just fine to be slow and not particularly talented.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, we'll see, but I think that's all that a lot of people need.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's one thing to learn the chords, but it's another thing to learn to accompany yourself there. That's a kind of a jump.
Yes, and a lot of them, it's not really themselves that they want to accompany. It's
the other people.
Yeah. They don't mind singing a little bit, but they are not willing to lead the song.
Yeah.
And it's very hard to learn to sense those chord changes without practice.
Yeah.
And it's embarrassing to get the practice at the campfire, for example, because the wrong chords sound a little funny. They just really need a safe place to go and develop that year, and I think that they can do it.
Yeah, that sounds good. That's a good problem.
We'll see. We need 11 per class to make it go so that I can get paid.
Mm-hmm.
And I really need to get paid.
Mm-hmm.
Now that this is, you know, real emphasis of my life is to try to put my time where my interest is. So we'll see, but I think it's going to be good. I think at least two of them will go is my guess, and I think that the other will probably go after a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know which it is that won't go.
Uh-huh.
But I kind of think
that some
of them will.
Sure. Okay, so how did you get started with the musical saw? Where did this one come from?
Well, I was wondering that, too. I know that my cousin was on Ted Mack's Amateur Hour many, many years ago, and that I got to stay up late because I was just a little kid to hear him sing, and the act before him was a musical saw. And that really was very, very interesting. But I certainly didn't think of me playing it. But then as we were going along, and I picked up the dulcimer, remember, all these years of playing and thinking of myself as a person who really can't play music very well, but does anyway. That's really my little niche,
uh-huh,
is the non-musician who is playing. I'm a singer, I'm a songwriter, but I'm a non-musician who plays because I'm a singer and a songwriter. So I added dulcimer and I fooled around a little with the bowed psaltery and just got the idea. Gee whiz, I really can add little instruments and do a little something fun on them. And then I was reading Mother Earth News and saw a musical saw advertised. And it had crossed my mind anyway. Wouldn't that be neat? And I had never seen a woman play the musical saw. I thought, wouldn't that be neat? And actually, I think it sounds horrible. It's not a sound that I would have been drawn to. Uh-huh. And I'm not alone in that. But more people think it's wonderful than think it's horrible. But the people who think it's horrible really think it's very, very horrible and want to be somewhere else. And the dogs do run away because it's such a very high sound and that vibrato, just not everybody likes it.
Yeah.
So anyway, I sent away to Mother Earth News for the saw, the special saw that was supposed to be a good sounding saw. And with the book and other little things that you needed to go with it, it was around, I think, $55 or so, where you could have bought a saw in a hardware store that would make pretty good music, but you wouldn't have known it because you need somebody who could play the saw to go into the music store and pick out one that makes good music. Now I can do that. Mm-hmm. But even so, the ones at the hardware store don't sound as good as mine. Mm-hmm. It really, really is a very, very nice saw.
Yeah.
So a little one sheet of instructions came with it, and I started with a little instruction sheet and did something that I don't know that it would be called music, but it was certainly making sound on the musical saw. Mm-hmm. And it just happened, lucky for me, that about a month later, I went to, 2 weeks in a row, I went to two music places. One is this convention in Virginia that I mentioned, which is a Unitarian convention, but it's very, very musical. And a nationally known storyteller was there, Chuck Larkin. And I had met him before, too, but he was teaching the musical saw. Just one little day on it, just 45 minutes or something like that. Mm-hmm. But here I was with my brand new saw and could get a few little tips. No music, and I couldn't get anything with the bow. The bow is the way to play the saw. The other students were doing much better than I was. Mm-hmm. And I was known as a musician there because they knew me as a songwriter and guitar player. But boy, I was not fast with that saw. And the other week, the week that touched that, I was in Elkins, West Virginia at Augusta studying my brand new dulcimer, which I'd only been playing for not quite a year at that time. And one of the ladies down the hall played the saw, and she was a good saw player. So she gave me a few tips. Mm-hmm. So with the tips that Chuck gave me and the tips that Jean gave me, names just don't...
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so close. I don't mind really missing, but I hate to almost be able to remember. Anyway, she's in my computer data bank, so she's not lost. Uh-huh. I played probably about half an hour a day for 2 weeks and could really do some pretty nice harmonizing with blues particularly. It really provided some very nice harmony. And so my friends got quite excited about that. So when I would go to a festival, I would get the saw out maybe a week ahead of time. So I put it down for most of a year. Mm-hmm. But if I knew I was going to be there with my blues friends, then I would get it out and just make a few noises that weren't screeches. Mm-hmm. And L.J. Slavin, I believe is his name, is a very fine saw player who's often played at White Springs. But I didn't ever hear him until last year. And I went to his workshop, and from my questions, he could tell that I could play the saw. And so he asked me to come to his next workshop and bring my saw, which he did. And the two of us played together. And really, well, I had a very good time. He had a good time making fun of the fact that I had bought my saw from a musical saw place. He really thought that was... Uh-huh. Sort of a shame, and really made me quite embarrassed about it, though I still think it was good for me.
Yeah.
So this year when I was going to White Springs, I put a little note that I did play the saw a little bit and could help with a saw workshop. And I was hoping that I'd actually be put with LJ instead of just there on his invitation, but he didn't come. And forestry was the theme, so they were very anxious to have a musical saw player. So I almost died when I got the letter that I was scheduled for 4 musical Sock concerts. Because, as I said to you earlier, I did not know how to play a single song like Way Down Upon the Swan. not a single one. And didn't particularly care for the way they sound either, though I don't hate it. But yeah. I like the harmony. I really love jamming. I can't jam on the guitar because I'm not a good enough guitar player, and I can't jam very well on the dulcimer because my friends play too complicated songs, but I could jam on the song. So I worked really hard, and I was out of work at that time, or just about to be, and going to all kinds of interviews, really stressed out, and all I needed was being afraid of making a horrible name for myself when I'd been trying for all these years to make a good name for myself and ruin it with a musical saw. But by about, really just about 2 days before the festival, all of a sudden, I could play some songs that sounded pretty darn good. And with my approach being that I'm really not a saw player, but that I was really willing to share what I had been learning, I thought that it was an approach that I couldn't really lose that badly on.
Yeah.
So it turned out that I actually could play quite well, much better than I thought I'd be able to. But I think people did believe me that I had just learned it, and that made them quite anxious to take their turn at it, which they probably wouldn't have been if I said, oh, I've been playing for 12 years. Well, why should they bother? But everybody who wanted a try got a try. And my friend Jean, that I just said, she had since moved to Florida. Mahaffey is her name, Jean Mahaffey. And so she saw me, and so I invited her to come, and she brought her saw. So the two of us at the forestry exhibit let everybody have a turn and really took some time with them. We took 5 or 10 minutes with a person, and I think just about everybody was able to make something so they could tell what it was they were looking for and could go home and do it if they cared to. And you don't need the bone to start. You take a little wooden spoon or something and hammer it.
Remember you showing that in the children's area?
Yeah, so they all have a saw.
Yeah.
And they have a wooden spoon, so they could check and see if they had an interest before they had to go and invest anything.
Okay. Well, I'm about out of tape on this reel. What I'd like to do is pull out another tape and record some of your music here.
Okay.
Would you have any closing comments or anything you'd like to add here? There's a lot more we could talk about here.
Oh, I know. This is the subject.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. It's really been a pleasure, and I'd certainly like a copy of this tape.
Okay, yeah, that's possible.
I've got children and I have grandchildren, and I'd kind of like to think that they could know this side of me a little better than they do.
Sure, yeah. Kind of helps in putting together family history or something like that. Yeah, lots of good stuff there. Okay, thanks a lot. We'll get a good... Okay, this is the second tape, side one, of my interview with Lynn Wadley. And this time what we're going to be doing is getting recorded examples of some of her saw playing and other music that she'll be making for me. And this accompanies a spoken tape, which we did just previously.
Okay, well, this will be Orally, which I believe is Stephen Foster's song, and then became Love Me Tender that Elvis Presley made popular. So more people know it, I think, for Love Me Tender now. There's any point in doing it through twice if we do it through once.
Oh, that sounds fine. I'll just leave the tape running here.
Okay. Let's see about... Oh, how about Way Down Upon the Swanee River? Let's see how we'll do on it.
Actually, that's about the best way that I like that song.
Let's see.
That sounds good.
Well, I just think in about 2 weeks it'll be a lot better, because I guess I really have gotten the idea that if this is what's going to make me popular, all right, I'll put the time in. In fact, I have a feeling if I signed up in community education to do musical saw for, say, 3 weeks or something like that, I'd probably have 40 people sign up.
I think so.
But, you know, I really don't want all that many people to start playing the saw, because... I mean, if you can do something, the only reason people love it is because they haven't heard it very much, then it doesn't make much sense to teach everybody you know how to do it.
Novelty act here.
Yeah. I just put some more rosin on my bow. We need to do that pretty much every song. Well, let's see.
I think this will really appeal to the fourth graders.
Let's see.
Now, if you could play a song and then rap over it, then you'd be all set with the fourth graders.
No, seriously, I do want to experiment with singing with the saw, with the harmonizing, because it just should be like two high voices singing. But it's very hard, because the only way you play the note on the saw is by hearing that note in your mind. So whatever you're hearing in your mind, if you're singing harmony, you're likely to be playing harmony on the saw to go with it.
Yeah.
It's very unusual to have anybody sing with the saw.
Huh. You were telling me that the vibrato helps you to slide into the note a little bit easier.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Yes, you never exactly get the note you're looking for on the saw. You just are sort of around there on the way from where you should have been to where you should be going, and you hit those notes along with many, many others. So if you can just get your timing right so that you never are caught being any place at all, that's pretty much not what keeps you out of trouble on this saw. But once in a while, it really is very embarrassing, because you know that right note is there somewhere and just can't find it, and just be sliding around all these wrong notes and never able, you know, there's every note, what are the 13 notes on the piano, and you can only find 12 of them on your saw, and you're running around there, oh my God, let me find it before the song is over. It really is very embarrassing. But then I developed the ability to play quite quietly.
Oh. Hide behind it here. You're finding out all your secrets here.
It is funny to be a saw player. I'm not particularly fond of the sound of the saw, but I do love the effect that it has on people.
Mm-hmm. It takes a lot of rosin, looks like.
Yes, it does. And it takes a lot of hand strength. It really makes my hand tired. In between the thumb and the index finger, and right actually on the thumb, and here in the ridges of a couple fingers where the end of the saw is really leaning into it. I did buy a little thing like a musical saw player's friend that you screw in, and it's a little handle, and you bend the handle, and it makes it much easier. It plays pretty well too, but I just didn't like it. It's like, if I'm going to do that, why don't I play my dulcimer or something? And because the whole charm of this is that if it's not exactly a saw, it's very much like a saw, and I want to be as close to the sawness as I can. I paid $15 for that darn thing, too. I have to maybe train a saw player and then sell it to him. So let's see if I can do Summertime. The hard thing is finding the place to start. If a friend was here who played on the guitar or something, I'd just say, give me a G or whatever. I've made notes of what keys I might like to do some of the songs in, but to just sort of find a note out of nowhere and then go with that, whatever it is. Hey, let me try to find that. I don't know, we'll just see. Because this one's going to go low. So I have to plan to not be too low when I start. The low notes are the hard ones. See, so I started a little bit too low, just a little bit. Let's try a little higher. Is that the same one, or is that a little higher? We'll try that.
A little higher there.
Not quite. I could always go up anyway, which is what I might do there if I was in doubt and I was playing for anybody. besides us here, I would just have gone up because I know that the up note is there. Now I'm getting too high. So I drop down. And I always say, your mother's rich and your daddy's good looking. Why not? And then people look at me so funny.
Watson does that tune. Did you ever hear him do Summertime?
I don't think so.
Oh, it's great.
I didn't even know he played the song.
Well, he sings it with guitar. Yeah. I don't think Doc Watson does play Slough.
By the way, I saw Chuck Larkin this summer and played the saw for him a little bit, and it was doing real well. I was harmonizing with somebody who was doing something else, and he said, it's so annoying when you teach somebody something and they can do it better than you.
Wow.
he didn't hear me do Orale or Summertime too low, but uh-huh. I am kind of proud of those saw harmonies that I can put in some places.
Uh-huh.
Okay, well, I'm going to do a song on the dulcimer, and the first song is going to be Ragtime Annie, which is one of my favorite bouncy songs, usually done by a fiddle.
Talking about this being a four-string dulcimer that's stringed in a three-string style?
Yes, three strings, that's the usual number of strings for a dulcimer. But because you usually play the melody on the treble string is the quietest string. It's common for modern and even some of the older dulcimers to have a double treble string. But the extra treble string makes it, and it's right there, right next to the original treble string, and makes it harder if you're a good player. If you play more than with a string, with a stick, or even just with a finger doing what the stick would do, when you start doing finger picking things and all, the two strings yeah. present something of a problem, not a big problem maybe, but there's a loss as well as a gain.
Yeah.
So a lot of people prefer to not have the double treble, especially people who change tunings frequently. Hmm. And I change tunings very frequently.
I see. Yeah, I was wondering what kind of tunings you use mostly.
Well, this is the what's emerging as the classic or something, not the traditional, but the most important tuning is a 1-5-8, you might say, tuning, a DAD, it's commonly called, with the treble D being a whole octave, that's why it would be 8. Really, I call it 1-5-1, but it, the 1 is an 8, because it's an octave higher. DAA is the traditional tuning, or 1-5-5, it doesn't really so much matter whether it's DAA, as long as it's 1-5-5, with those notes being the note of the scale, with do being 1, say, and sol being 5. I also play in a 1-4-1, and lots of others, a couple of minor tunings that have different numbers too. So I'm always changing. Every couple songs I'll change the tuning. And so that's the reason that I keep my extra treble string off. I keep it on, tucked down, out of the way, and then when I break a string, I just flip it up. I did that Sunday when I was playing at church. And,
I see.
In that last song, Ragtime Annie, first I played the melody on the treble, and then I played the melody and even the associated chords just backwards with it being on the bass string. And even though it's played exactly the same, because as you can see, like 1-5-1 is reversible, it feels very different. And it's much more difficult to play the melody on the bass area. Your fingers tend to fall off the dulcimer much more. And that's where I did get into a little bit of trouble with it. But to be able to do that almost makes it sound like a whole different version of the melody. You wouldn't know it was just the same thing, only played in the on the other side of the dulcimer. I haven't had my voice for about a month. I got a terrible cold, and I haven't been able to sing at all. My cold is gone now, but my voice isn't quite back. But I was thinking that maybe I could give a try
at
doing Cindy for you. That's a really good old song that is a lot of fun to do in the dulcimer. Do that in the DAD tuning, too. There is a melody. I'm going to change the tuning now to the traditional 1-5-5. when my ex-husband and I were traveling in Canada, he founded a store, and it's called the Westphalia Waltz. It was an old sheet music, used kind of stuff store. It was a fiddle tune, and he played it. It was my different chords. When you change the tunings, then all the places you used to want to put your fingers no longer signify. Anyway, so he used to play this Westphalia Waltz on his fiddle. He played a lot of instruments. And it was my favorite of all songs that he played on the fiddle. And when I got the dulcimer, about a month or 6 weeks into it, I just got the idea, I wonder if I could possibly play that Westphalia Waltz that I love so much. It didn't seem like it'd be all that hard, and it was so pretty. And sure enough, I was able to figure it out, and I've played it quite a lot since, and in fact, it's on my cassette. And when I play it, people just love it. And musicians come and they, say, oh, I want to hear that waltz again. What was that? It's not that obscure. I mean, here and there that you'll hear it at a festival or something. But mostly, most people don't know it. And it's so beautiful that when I was doing the first number, I thought, that'd be a really nice one for us to put on your tape here, because it is not popularly known.
Oh, great.
So this will be the Westphalia Waltz. Auto harp now. Let's see. Can't think of the name of it this second. Can I tell you in a minute?
Sure.
Okay. I usually play with finger picks, but they're not around, so I'll just play with my hands. Stuff Like That is the name of it. A blues song. I love the blues. No time like the time you're all alone. First up, then
bag of bones. Bathtub gym. Stuff like that can make a dead man grin. Not all night, didn't find a dadgum thing. I wrote, need someone tender so life won't be so tough. Someone to smooth me, 'cause Lord, I'm feeling rough.
It's been a fun afternoon here.
Yes.
Conversation and performance here.